You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
This is Jim Semivan, and you are listening to That UFO Podcast.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to That UFO Podcast. And joining me for a bit of a mammoth breakdown as the world burns around us, let's get back to talking about UFOs and the chaos involved in that topic right now. I've got the host of the Psychoactivo podcast. I have butchered that pronunciation, but I imagine it's psychoactive in English. But yeah, Psychoactivo.
Yes,
I've got Pavel Ibarra. Pavel, welcome, mate.
Andy, it's a pleasure to be here, man. Thank you for having me. I'm honored to be here. Thanks.
Listen, we've been talking for a while on X or Twitter, whatever it's been. We've DM'd over the years and long overdue. And it's good to, when I've got guest co-hosts coming on, it's been nice to get some different folks and different opinions in the last couple of months as Dan's busy at the moment. And I thought it was a great chance to reach out and finally get yourself on. For those on YouTube, you'll see that Pavel is wearing his Barcelona strip. So apologies to all the Madridistas out there who you'll be upsetting. But yeah, listen, Pavel, just before we crack on discussing the UFO news, for anyone who hasn't heard yourself or watched Psychoactivo, tell us a little bit about yourself and your podcast.
Yeah, I'm a journalist, first and foremost. For 15 years, I did sports journalism. And then in 2021, I opened the channel. The first idea was to talk about what I learned through a 10-year-long psychedelic experience trip. Because I was very, when I was young, I was a wild man, and I started studying consciousness quite a bit and reading a lot about consciousness studies. And in 2019, I saw the Fravor interview on Rogan. And until then, I liked seeing stuff about UFOs. I liked documentaries and all that, but I didn't take it seriously. And then I saw him speaking, and that changed my ontology quite a bit. And then I started researching, and I realized that there was something to this. And just last year, the start of 2024, I started doing my content in English. And here we are.
Yeah, I've been doing my content in English for 5 years as well. So yeah, it's I can fluent in English and Scottish. But listen, Pavel, you've got a great channel. Like you say, it's been going, what, a year and a half now. Some great content on there. And let's get into some of the UFO news that's kicking about right now, because there's been a lot.
Yeah.
And I've put this off for a few weeks now, but the file is getting that big on what's going on. I've started knocking off news items that it seems are old hat and they only happened a few weeks ago. But the first one I want to kick off with, a lot of folks asked me to comment on the Tim Phillips interviews that have been happening.
Yeah.
Timothy Phillips, for anyone who hasn't heard, was the former deputy director of Arrow, the All Domain Anomaly Resolution Office. He was on with Stephen Greenstreet. He was then on with myself. He's been on with Mick West since as well, and I don't know if he's jumped on any others. But a lot of folks, Pavel, have been curious around why Tim Phillips is coming out now, what's his angle, the narrative behind, you know, Arrow doing damage control. Just to be really honest, because I've not shared this yet, I spoke to Tim Phillips on DM last year. And he asked me to go through the DOD at the time if I wanted an interview. I think it's when he was still the deputy director of Arrow. I never heard back from the DOD. I chased them up a few times. I imagine they get a million emails and just weren't interested. So when I saw that he had been on with Stephen Greenstreet, I reached back out to him just to check and see, look, I never heard from the DOD previously. Are you still needing me to go through them for interviews? And he said, no. He said, I'm in that phase now where I'm going to be retiring soon. I've signed my NDAs and I can arrange this myself. So yeah, let's do it. That's what happened. I will let folks from there decide if there's going to be some kind of conspiracy around that. If Arrow or the DOD are asking Tim Phillips to go out there and do these interviews. But genuinely, before and after, he was a nice guy. He was really chatty with me. We were talking about random stuff. He talked about visiting the UK. I had a few folks curious about the noise in the background. There was someone there watching him. His wife, I believe, was in the background at one point before the interview, and his dogs were wandering about. So there was nothing nefarious going on. There was no, he wasn't in a studio. It wasn't a set. Honestly, I think it was just kind of good timing. I reached back out to him. But I didn't agree with everything he said. I do agree he dodged a few questions. I felt sometimes he answered a question with something slightly less relevant than what I'd asked him, but maybe yeah. that's to be expected. What's your take on Tim Phillips and him coming forward now?
Well, at the beginning when I saw him on Green Street, my first thought was obviously, well, he's embellishing a lot of stuff maybe, and still very much involved with what he was doing at the DOD. But then I saw him with you, and that did make me change, because I do know that you probably have a good eye for when somebody's going to try to maybe try to bullshit you or something. And I was like, if Andy accepted to have him on, that means he didn't have a bad vibe from him, I would guess. So maybe he really is curious, like anybody of us would, about these topics. And that made me rethink a lot. But I still keep in mind what he said about David Grush on LinkedIn, because he was really aggressive towards Grush. Yeah. And I do keep that in mind still. And I also keep in mind that regardless of whether he's already retiring or not, he still has to answer to people above him. So whatever he's saying there, I would guess that he has permission to say so. But it did surprise me that he talked about black triangles and about these 40 cases that they still can't solve. That surprised me, because it's one of the first times that I hear from them acknowledging something like that. And although he still keeps his idea that it's not like from another place, or he thinks it's technology made by humans for the most part, I don't know. I had a generally good feeling after he spoke to you specifically.
Well, when he was on with Green Street, again, folks can believe what they want, but I checked out Stephen Greenstreet had done a Twitter space or X space just after that interview, but I listened to it afterwards. And he mentioned that he wasn't planning on interviewing Tim Phillips the way he did. Now, I know what's been released is like a 20-minute piece, but there's like 2 hours worth of recording. I don't know if you'd heard this, Pavel, but essentially he was reaching out to ask him a question about something, to which Tim Phillips, they started chatting back and forward. And then he was like, wait a minute, do you mind if we record this? So Greenstreet basically said, that's why it is the way it is. And it was kind of unplanned, a little bit unscripted. And I don't know if he's going to release the rest of that interview. Maybe he will, maybe he won't. But that was interesting to hear. I suppose we have to think. I get the Grush LinkedIn post I had kind of forgotten about, and then folks mentioned it. I get the feeling, and I could be wrong, just my opinion, Tim Phillips is a guy who doesn't have an interest in the UFO topic per se. He's come into it very neutral. He had a job to do. He doesn't enjoy the topic in the way we do, and the way people listening to this or watching this do, and that he probably hears and sees, not that this is right or wrong, but given his working environment and where he is based and the people he is surrounded with, he probably does have a negative view of whistleblowers like David Grush, like Matthew Brown, like Lenville Logan, like Sarah Gamm, like whoever, because he's being told these people are wrong, they're lying, they're making stuff up. He'll hear things in the background being disparaging about their character, you know, the work they were doing, what they actually know. And that's how he forms his opinion, like any of us. So I doubt he then thinks, well, I'm going to go stick on that UFO podcast, or I'm going to go watch Seco Activo and find out what the other side are saying. He probably just thinks, well, if that's the case, then I'm going to believe my superiors and my colleagues and my peers. So I think it was just a case of, we got to see the other side of the fence. And it's nice to hear that opinion for me. I don't have to believe it. I don't have to go along with that narrative. But let me just say, I interviewed Tim Phillips, and then an hour later had Stephen Bassett. you can't get two more polarizing views of a topic than a guy from the DOD and then Stephen Bassett talking about disclosure. So, but that for me is like, you've got to listen to a lot of different opinions, and it kind of helps me piece together where I'm at with things. And I think that came across from a lot of folks as well. He made those comments right towards the end about being a Christian. And the comments about maybe there's a dimensionality attached to this, and that was quite interesting, and he maybe let his veil down and his guard down a little bit at that point. I don't like the explanations of Malmstrom being EMP stuff and all that kind of thing, and it just didn't come across well for me, like some of that.
Yeah, I did like also that he mentioned and even praised the work that the Tedesco brothers are doing. I found that really refreshing.
Yep. And it's good to hear from these guys. I would rather hear from them than not. And I've tried to get Dr. Sean Kirkpatrick on the podcast before. He has DM'd me back and forward. He seems to be a little bit more selective as to when he goes out on a show and what he does. Did you see Jesse Michaels from American Alchemy has offered him $50,000? I don't personally think that has a great look to it, because now if Sean Kirkpatrick accepts that, not that he shouldn't accept $50,000. I mean, if Sean Kirkpatrick or someone offered you $50,000, same with myself, to go and do an interview, I wouldn't care if they were going to rub shit on me and slap me in the back of the head. My wife would make me take, my wife would be like, go and take that money.
Same here. Same here.
That's not an open invitation, folks, but you know, everyone's got a price. But I think for Sean Kirkpatrick, he now can't accept that. I would like to see Sean Kirkpatrick on with Jesse Michaels, on with Joe Rogan, on with Lex Friedman. I think you're going to get a very one-sided bias approach though to that conversation still. And maybe there's ways to do that, because Jesse Michaels, I assume he pays his guests. And he has the money and the backing to do that. We know why. And he also flies them out to record. You know, I can't do that. Pavel, I don't know if you're in a situation where you can.
Nope.
I can't even fit a guest in this space to record. So
I do have a space to bring people, but I'm not going to pay for them to come. I don't have the money.
A couple of $1,000 for a flight and expenses and then everything else that goes along with it. Yeah. So
we're just normal muggles here, man.
Normal muggles. Absolutely. So listen, it was great to hear people's thoughts on it. A couple of comments I got, Pavel, I just want to share with you before we move on. Ryan, one of the listeners, said, I know you'll get a lot of flack for this interview, but I'd like to say kudos. The recent interview with Tim Phillips is amazing and disturbing, not at all what I hoped for or expected, but so important in what it revealed on so many points. People will want to debate what's lip service versus what he truly knows. Thanks, Andy. He said, P.S. I'm writing as an earnest skeptical believer, not all in on any aspect of this topic, but I value rational critical thinking. And I heard very little of that in Phillips, despite his claims of it, which is fair. Peter said, listen to the latest podcast with Tim Phillips. Great interview. Honestly, after about half the interview, I felt a bit deflated and could not help thinking this investigation was legitimate. But when you asked him about the possibility the phenomena might be alien, and he responded, I'm a Christian and can accept the supernatural, and never answered if he believed the possibility of an alien presence. My thought was he has cleverly deceived the audience. He proceeded to explain away the Malmstrom missile base incident and others. Although he is knowledgeable about government classification and arcane programs, I am inclined to believe this deception. Just my thoughts. So there was a whole myriad of comments like that around the interview, which I appreciate. But again, Pavel, would you not rather hear people like this come forward and speak and answer questions than not? What's your take?
It's better, because even if they're lying, you can read them. If they're on video, on audio, you can listen to what they say and how they speak between the lines, and that's better than nothing at all. So yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah, I'm on that. Let's move on then to a little bit more sensational news. So Jeremy Corbell and George Knapp, on their 79th episode of Weaponized, released a couple of videos of the same incident. So this was essentially looks like a flying saucer or disc-shaped object that is filmed from above. I'm guessing some kind of either satellite or reconnaissance drone or craft that must be quite high, but they're saying it's shot from above looking down at the clouds. And essentially, the three videos are thermal footage. And you see, the first video, you can't really see anything. I don't know about you, Pavel. Yeah, you can't make anything out. It's thermal imaging, folks. So imagine the clouds, but with that kind of black and white, kind of awkward look to it. The second video, however, you see a disc-shaped object moving. It does say that it's labeled as being enhanced by AI to allow for image clarity and whatnot. This reminded me of the movie Nope. The saucer moving through the clouds really quietly. And then similar to the second video, the third video, again, shows a little bit of movement. If real, I showed my wife this and a couple of friends who aren't UFO people. And they said, wow, one said, wow, that's terrifying if that's real. They were a little bit taken aback, but also that's as far as their interest went with it. They're not going off and digging into the topic.
So I'm not sure if it was saucer shaped necessarily, because it's from above, but I got the feeling like it was kind of 3D ish, you know, the object, and I think it may be orb shaped instead of saucer shaped. That's the feeling that I got.
Yeah, that's not unfair. For me, I get the disc vibe from it. You can't really discern that, because your opinion is valid as mine, because you're looking at it from above. Corbell, in the piece with George Knapp, and I always recommend folks go and watch the original content, Corbell does mention that the file is labeled as disc from an official government point of view. However, I think Knapp mentions that, you know, it could be a sphere, it could be round, we don't know. They also can't gauge size. Again, just from my perspective, it looked like it would be big, but again, this is just the way my brain's picked it up. Yeah, I'm guessing other folks could have picked it up as small. Other folks, Pavel, have said it looks like it may be a water droplet on the camera lens. I don't,
or a reflection of the sun. I saw too. Somebody said that too. I was like, maybe. Right, okay. I don't think so.
Now you say that, I totally get why they've thought so. And it could be the camera moving rather than the object, but it does look like the object's moving. I get that your brain can be deceived with this kind of stuff. And it's like those videos where you're trying to see something, and until someone mentions, look for this, or actually, did you realize this? You go, you get that kind of optical illusion. Let's just say, if this video is genuine, it's a fascinating piece of footage. Again, though, and Corbell's very honest to say it's not the original video. This is someone filming a screen. And I know, Pavel, some folks have mentioned, and I don't know if you've seen any follow-up on this, there are kind of two or three dots and lights in the video as well. From my perspective, though, those are just camera sensor lights or something. I don't think they're part of the video. I didn't take away that those are orbs flying around the video.
I think there's
either.
Also a group of people who are like very much into this hypothesis from Mr. Patrick Jackson, who claims that there's like an orb kind of system that is all around Earth, and they're always surrounding these objects. But I think that a lot of those, they're just dots that are like confused as orbs. I don't think specifically in this one, I don't think there's much to that. It's just
I don't think those lights are part of. It's funny, I recorded we had some really warm weather in the UK over the last couple of days, and the other night there was like a huge electrical storm, which we don't get very often here in the UK at all, and it went on for a few hours. I filmed it from outside. I put my hand out my window, because I know filming against the glass, you know, reflection and all that. So I put my hand outside the window to film, and I put it on the Discord for the podcast, and one of the listeners mentioned, oh wow, look at that light in the middle. And I was like, it's just a camera sensor, but you're going to get people picking up on this little object that comes in and out of view, in and out of focus. It's just the light from the camera. And I'm no expert, but I don't think there was anything in that video outside of the huge disc/saucer shaped object that we're meant to be looking at. How do you feel about these types of leaks, Pavel? Because I think Corbell and Knapp get a rough time from some people in terms of how they're getting this stuff, that they're getting leaks that are being filmed from other sensor systems. What's your take? Do you like this kind of leak happening? Would you rather see it than not see it?
I rather see it, yeah, but I also get why some people may be rubbed the wrong way when it's only Corbell and Knapp the ones releasing them, because they're the ones who had these connections. And presumably, they get permission to show them too, because if this footage truly is from the DOD or from the Navy or from some other entity, they could be classified. So releasing material like that without going through the proper channels can get you in trouble really, really fast. So, and they've explained their method and how they go about it, and that's why they take so long to release it. I think it's very valuable, especially these days, because we're living in an AI world now, and getting footage that is like really close up, it always can be fake. But when you get it from an official entity like the DOD or the government, and you get it from different sensors, and you get also from different people confirming that it's real, that's different. That changes it. So, of course, I would much rather get this type of footage than something that could potentially be fake and from an official source too. Much rather. Yeah.
I do like they've embraced the crowdsourcing nature of investigators online, because how often that a piece of footage goes online that's meant to be groundbreaking, that's meant to be huge, and within minutes, folks on X particularly have worked out time, date, location, size, and the object was actually just this, or the object could be this, and it's a prosaic explanation. They seem to have embraced that now to say, we're putting this out there. They said they had vetted it and sat on the footage for quite some time, which I'll take their word for that. And they have said, you know, let's let the investigators online, if they can gauge size from some of the raw data, which is on the screen. And like you say, I hadn't heard the moving sun thing before. People can work that out, I'm sure, from the movement of the cameras and everything else. Jeremy Corbell does mention they do know of additional sensor data that is available, maybe not publicly. But there's a frustration. Well, if we don't see that and can't see that, you can only go off the basics of what we have. I'm always more up for seeing this stuff than not. But I've not seen many folks online officially debunk this yet. Or we're going to get on to talk about the Bugosphere in just a moment, which may be slightly different. A lot more controversial, I think. But this bit of footage has certainly been interesting. It's funny. I think if this had dropped a couple of years ago, I think folks would have been all over it. It probably speaks to how spoiled we are now with videos, whistleblowers, news, that it lands, but it doesn't have the big ripple that it would have had a few years ago. Is that how you feel?
Yeah, and if you ask me too, the enhanced version of the footage, if it's real and if it's an anomalous object, I would say it's kind of on the same level as gimbal. The other two are not as impressive, in my opinion, Tic Tac and Go Fast, but Gimbal remains, to me, the best piece of footage officially released by the government. And this one is kind of on the same page, I would say. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think that's unfair, just given the nature of what we're looking at here. Why don't you think, though, given we're taught, if again, take it for face value, Pavel, we are looking at a sphere or disc-shaped object flying in and out of clouds. Why isn't this bigger news?
Because we're desensitized by the plethora of news about UFOs. And about half of that, I would say, is not real news. It's just to construct it and made to confuse people, I would say. And it's really hard to make out what is potentially BS and what is actually true or real. And this happens mostly with all of the people coming forward and claiming things. And if you ask me, none of them really has shown any really specific kind of smoking gun evidence to support the claims that they have. So that makes it more difficult. And people who are casual observers, they don't really get on this unless it's like something really compelling and from a more official source, you might say. Because yeah, Corbell and Knapp do have one of the top podcasts in science on Spotify, but they're not really mainstream. They're like the most mainstream you can get in UFO podcasts.
Yeah.
But they don't, they're not really mainstream, right?
Yeah, no, that's not unfair. I think they've got, I think especially Corbell, and I used to say this when myself and Dan would talk about this in podcasts in the past, where Corbell does have an overlap where I think he's got people really interested in his content that maybe aren't big UFO fans.
Yeah.
Just on their own, that perhaps they'll watch it because it's Corbell. And that can't be a bad thing, because it's going to get folks into the subject in some way, shape or form. But yeah, it's a funny one. On that, there's another big piece of footage / object in the news at the moment. And it kind of overlaps a few different news items here. The Bugasphere. Is that Buga?
Yeah.
Buga. Buga yeah. Is named after, you know, where it was found in Colombia. So yeah. We had two gentlemen, and Pavel, correct me if I'm wrong here, because I've tried to make sure I've got this right. These two guys filmed what looked like a metallic sphere or orb, whatever you want to call it, flying about in the sky. There is footage of this online. They then go and find the sphere in a yeah. clearing. The sphere itself is, as you would expect, round, silver, metallic. It has markings and symbols on it, and is now being put, and I'm going over two stories here because Ross Coulthart and Jesse Michaels talked about it, but also it's been presented at a conference by Jaime Musan with a bit of a strange cast of characters attached to it that you wouldn't always necessarily to expect to see in the same room, which was a bit of an odd one, but we'll get to that. What's your initial take on this Bugasphere?
Initially, I tried to stay away a little bit from it because of who is attached to it. As you know, I'm Mexican. And one of the reasons that I started doing the content in English is because Jaime Maussan has a hold on pretty much everything related to the UFO topic in Latin America. And if I was going to do my content in Spanish, I was going to have to deal with everything that represents Jaime. And I didn't want to do that. So every time a case from him comes out, I am naturally skeptical because of the history. And when this came out, I was skeptical too. Right now, I don't have a clear opinion on whether it's real or not. I'm still looking at everything that they're releasing and all the details. I know that it's surrounded by optical fiber, and I know that it's 21% silicon, and it also has aluminum in it. I asked about the percentage of aluminum. They still wouldn't tell me what the percentage is, but I'm not covering it fully, really. The only thing I covered was that presence of weird UFO figures.
Yeah. So let's talk about that then. So
yeah,
you've got this conference with Jaime Musan, who has presented it. In attendance, you had Congressman Eric Burleson, who I've hosted on the podcast before. He is also part of the UAP Secrets Task Force. The Secrets Task Force in general. Christ, there's too many names of things. Along yeah. with Anna Plina Luna and those lot. Stephen Greer was part of it. Lawyer Danny Sheehan was there as well. And Jaime Musan,
And Timothy Alberino too was there on front row.
Timothy Alberino was there, yeah. The one for me though, Eric Burleson being there is a real strange one, because I've got to say, no pun intended, it takes balls, it takes massive spheres, to be a sitting congressman or woman and go along to an event that's going to have a lot of heat attached to it, I would imagine.
Yeah.
As this would. So I was really surprised to see a congressman there. Issue for me is anything that Jaime Musan is attached to immediately, for many, there is a credibility issue attached to that. And I've talked about this before. You can maybe talk about from that kind of point of view of yourself, from the Mexican point of view, how you feel about Jaime Maussan being attached to this stuff. I worry there's an element of the boy who cried wolf about Jaime Maussan, where, and I don't necessarily think it's completely malicious. It may just be he wants everything to be ET. Everything is non-human. And even if you watch the first 5 minutes of this presentation, he's already talking about this object as if it's definitively human. But I think what he kind of, to paraphrase, he says straight off the bat, this is non-human technology. I'm so excited. It's ET. He then says more analysis needs done and they still need to prove that. But everything they've found thus far shows it's non-human. Those statements don't match up for me. And that just summed up perfectly what this is. And it just takes away from the, you know, what it could be.
And it sums up perfectly the way Jaime Maussan has conducted himself over the last 30 years or so. Because, and listen, I've spoken to him. He was my first interview. And he's a decent man. He helps animals. He does a lot of stuff for the environment. I really appreciate that from him. But people need to understand that he has developed his own brand as the guy who wants to tell the world that ETs are real.
Yep.
That's his brand in Latin America. So everything that is surrounding him, and this includes other news networks and sponsors, because he just opened a full channel, national television channel, just about this, and they gave him the license to it. And that's almost impossible to get. So he does a lot of commitments to a lot of brands that tell him you need to keep an eye on your brand. So I think that is why he presents himself that way, and he jumps the gun often, because he has to. He's not the only one. He's a whole machinery of a bunch of people in an industry in Latin America. Yeah. So, and I mean, it's his thing. He has to do it, you know. But honestly, if he wants to find that level of credibility with the overall UFO community, not just in Latin America, there's a few things that I think that he could do differently. Let's just leave it at that. I think that an interesting point too, because I'm going to give you a little bit of a backstory here. I knew that Burleson was going about a day before, because Timothy Alberino is very close to Burleson. He's had him on this podcast also, and they're like really close. Like they, so I figured it out by myself right after Timothy released a tweet, and I asked Timothy, and he was just radio silent. And I reached out to someone who is on Jaime's team, and I told them that I knew, and they were like, dude, don't release anything because it's going to spoil it and they're going to scare off Burleson. And I was like, yeah, I mean, it is a big deal that a congressman from the U.S. is in that kind of event. I did not know that he was going to be next to Stephen Greer. And when I saw that, I was like, oh man, I can already see the memes. And yeah, there were a lot of memes.
Yes, it's been a very memeable year so far, not just for UFOs. And I think that there's that, and it could be unfair, but I think given what you've just said, especially given you're much closer to Jaime and the culture surrounding him, it's kind of what I expected. And it's like every time Kim Kardashian gets a new boyfriend and she tells you this guy's the one, and you think, yeah, but I've seen the 10 before him that were the one as well. That this is what it's like with Jaime and UFOs, where everything he gets a hold of, this is the shiny new toy, and he moves on to something else. And it's like, yeah, but surely you're watering down your credibility each time you just move on from something, when there seems to be a lack of acknowledgement, at least openly, around actually this thing isn't what we thought it was or what we wanted it to be. Here's how we figured that out. We do want to push on to something else. You just kind of bin it and move on to the next thing. And there's a lot of that chat. You mentioned before Patrick Jackson. Patrick, for those who may be not on social media or see Patrick posting, is a guy who talks a lot about orbs and spheres as being, and we'll get to this on a few shows here, a kind of galactic or earthly defense system that are patrolling the planet for a non-human intelligence to protect us, or at least keep other entities away. It's a bit of an out there hypothesis, but given we're talking about spheres and stuff like that, we'll get to that, your opinion on that, in a second. But
yeah,
less than 24 hours ago, I would have assumed Patrick would be the kind of guy who, given this Booga sphere, the situation around it, would have been all over it and really like positive about it. He is 80% sure it's a hoax. And he said, looking at the object up close, you can see the symbolism is sloppy, that it's not as, you know, when you see a really good crop circle, it's really polished and symmetrical and it looks incredible. And he's saying it looks like poor workmanship even on this, that when you really look into it, that it doesn't look as good as it should. I know Ross Coulter, speaking to Jesse Michaels, talked about, and I talked about this a few weeks ago, Brazilian journalist Ronnie Vernet believes it resembles far too closely a fuel tank. And I know Ronnie published that picture. It is very close to it, isn't it? And it could just be kind of manipulated to look a bit more alien. I'm going to use that in quotes. What's your take on someone like Patrick Jackson coming out and dismissing this as likely a hoax and that conversation?
Well, for starters, every single case that comes out about UFOs or phenomena, we have to assume that it will always have a default debunk. There will always appear a debunk for any case, whether it's real or not, because that's just the way it goes. But the only reason that I still remain undecided on whether this thing is real or not is because there's a university from Mexico, one of the most respected ones, that is involved. People, scientists and academics who are involved in the investigation of this sphere. So I do want to see what they have to say in terms of official stance on what this thing is. And when they release the full data, because there's a lot of studies that still haven't been done or revealed. And until then, I just want to wait a little bit, and whoever comes out with a debunk of it or pictures of it, or if they haven't seen it in person and if they haven't spoken to the academics who are involved in this, it's really hard to get on their side, because these are people who are firsthand handling this thing. So I know that Jaime is involved, and that can be a problem for some, but there are also a lot of academics involved. And this also moves into an issue that we've dealt with the Nazca beings, with the Tridactyls, because initially we all saw that there was a lot of messing around with them and a lot of false information attached to it. But as time has gone by, more and more people seem to be realizing that the data of the, at least the M types, that Professor Stephen Brown calls them, like that, the big ones, is real. Like, they have tridactyl features. They're some kind of a hominid that is really strange, and it was alive at a certain point in time. And that it took a long time for people to get there. And unfortunately, and this is very real, people in the Five Eyes countries started looking at the specimens more seriously when either American or British or English-speaking scientists or academics were involved. And that's an unfortunate problem that persists. And I think if this Booga sphere is real, something similar may be happening. And it's really early stages to really talk about it and to have an opinion really on whether it's real or not. And yeah, it's unfortunate, because I know that UNAM, that university, is really prestigious. They have actually, their lead scientist in the nuclear physics department is Dr. Miguel Alcubierre, who is very familiar, who is well known in the UFO community due to his warp drive hypothesis. Yeah. So they have really incredible people there. So we have to give them at least some credence and wait for their results to come out.
Yeah, I think it's going to require that. I get that there's that issue, isn't there, that because it's not, if someone said Harvard were attached to this, it would instantly probably get more attention immediately internationally. But because it's not, there seems to be that reluctance. But why do you think there is still that reluctance for scientists from the US to get involved? And I appreciate someone who's a Mexican national, but you're going, well, why isn't it an issue that, you know, we're doing it? But then, to be honest, I think if a university in Scotland got a hold of this to examine it, I don't think that would get the attention either.
Yeah, I guess it has to do with both clout, because it's Harvard, you know?
Yeah.
But it also, in my opinion, has to do with some kind of language barrier issue. Because something that I've noticed, whenever a case is presented in a different language, specifically in Spanish, because I deal with Spanish most, I can tell when the stuff that is presented in English is not well translated. And you can see that people get lost there quite a bit, if you ask me. And that's something that I've been trying to do on the channel when I translate my interviews from Spanish to English with AI, that I try to make the translation as accurate as possible so people can really understand fully what the person is talking about. And that's become one of the biggest issues. And to be fair, that is one of the biggest issues that Jaime Maussan and his entire team have been dealing with for decades now. Right now, they're not doing it properly either. There's some things that get lost in translation, and that is also a major issue. And it seems really trivial, but it is happening.
Yeah, no, I think that does happen. And I'm even quite aware of that. If I'm watching a subtitled TV show or a movie, I kind of read it with an eye on that sentence reads really awkwardly. I don't like listening to dubbed. I think I'd rather just hear the native language and read the subtitles. And sometimes you look and go, oh, that reads so poorly, but they're not saying that because there's no translation for that word from Korean to English. So what they've done is put a real base thing, and it sounds like they're talking like children at times, but they're not. It's just the way it's translated. So, and people will naturally just fall off. I'm hoping with AI getting better and better, we can get those kind of live translations of things as they go along, because it can be prohibitive. That when I turn on a 3-hour presentation, and I imagine a lot of folks do it, they hear it's in Spanish, Portuguese, French, Italian. You go, well, there's no subtitles, and I don't want to wait for the English speaker to come on in 45 minutes, so I'll just leave it and turn off here. So I get that. Jesse Michaels and Ross Coulter on American Alchemy had an interview, and they did talk about the bogosphere as well. Ross said he wasn't sure either way with it, and it would be hard to prove, or it shouldn't be hard to prove one way or another if the object's real. But I think it speaks to what you said. You need the science to be done, you need the presentations to be done. Did you see the video that went out of some of the folks involved demonstrating the weight of the object? Now, there was the basic claim was the object changes weight, and it can be anything from like less than a kilogram to 10 kilograms in weight, depending on circumstances. They then demonstrated in video the object being flown with a drone, and the drone has a payload weight of less than a kilogram, and it seems to fly perfectly fine. But all they're doing is telling you this is what's happening. They're not showing you a proven to it. They're not even like, for me, Pavel, weigh the object and show us on a scale, this object currently weighs 6 kilograms. Okay, cool. Without cutting the video, attach it to the drone, show us the drone can only lift a certain amount by demonstrating that, then attach the sphere, let the drone fly off. They don't. It's all edited, and you're just having to take their word for it when it seems there's some real basic science, really basic science for idiots like me, could be done there to at least make me go, huh, that's pretty interesting. As opposed to telling me, oh yeah, that's actually really heavy and that shouldn't be able to lift that.
I know that's one of the reasons why I think, for example, Dr. Gary Nolan doesn't want to get involved in cases like this, for example, because there is like a showmanship element to when they're presenting the cases, because it is Maussan and it is television. And that's why they do it like that. That's why they edit it like that. And I think that if you get like a fresh case like this one, like the bogosphere, you need to do a lot of the early investigation in private before you show it really to the 100%. World and not do it in real time like that, because a lot of these things can happen. Like I got to take your word for it just like that while you're doing it in real time. That's not. And once you have the more results, I think that's when it's okay to show it to the world and do as many edits as you want, but only after you have gone through a real rough scientific process and really, really get the results that you are either waiting for or the real results, the real truth, you know?
Yeah. And I'll use that analogy from before. Kim Kardashian and Pete Davidson should not be declaring their love for each other before they've been in a few dates. So yeah, that's spot on.
Exactly.
They talk about the other sphere on the Jesse Michaels and Ross Coulter interview that Ross had from last year that he'd got from a guy who lives out in the sticks in the US in Texas, I believe it was. He said, really interestingly, that metal sphere is now in the possession of Brandon Fugel. And he talked about, the sphere moving on its own, that it would roll across a floor that they said was perfectly level and flat, and that it went round a pole and came back, and that it's a really odd object. But that the skin, the way Ross worded it was, Brandon Fugel is now in possession of it, and the Skinwalker Ranch show is going to pay for it to be studied. So while I appreciate some folks may look at the sensationalism around the filming and the television aspect of Skinwalker Ranch, I believe, being there before the ranch, there is a phenomenon going on there, something genuine. I get there's a whole production around it. It can't be a bad thing that if they're going to study it, we'll get some kind of results, as opposed to this being another sphere that just disappears into the ether.
Yeah. And that's a point that is not the first time that I hear it raised. I think it's important that to note that these spheres appear everywhere in the world. A bunch of people have approached me telling me, yeah, I got one of those. Mine is made of stone. Mine is made of some other material. And some people claim that when they're feeling close to it, they are feeling differently physically. So, and they've also told me that some spheres have been confiscated from them. All claims, no proof or anything, but it is something that people say it's happening to them. So the fact that they're giving attention like this to these objects, I think it protects them from being confiscated like that or stolen, you know? So it's a good thing. I agree.
Almost like when we talk about the government giving private contractors pieces of material or crashed craft, it's safer for them for multiple reasons. So yeah, I could totally get that. On the American Alchemy interview with Ross Coulter, they do talk about Ross's time with Melinda Leslie. They talk about the orbs being viewed, the military craft, anomalous craft. Did you get to watch that at the time, even the Ross Coulthart, Melinda Leslie stuff, the underground bases conversation comes back out?
Yeah, but the golden orb that they saw, that was very interesting.
What's your take on that?
Well, I guess that if you were going to find something anomalous, that would be the exact place where you could find it. But I still can't tell you whether that golden orb is really something anomalous or some kind of testing technology that they have and that they're using, because as far as I'm concerned, that golden orb was being escorted by Black Hawk helicopters, wasn't it?
I believe so. Yeah,
so whenever that happens, I immediately think they must know what it is because they're escorting it somewhere, so they know. It's really interesting, but this goes to the debate of whether the military already has something or they already cracked something, or if we really only are dealing with something anomalous. I think both things could be happening. And I think that if you find something near one of those bases, it generally could be something that the military has, not that it's necessarily anomalous. That's just my take on it.
Yeah. Do you know what's funny? I think if you speak to an ordinary member of the public about the idea of underground military bases and UFO stuff, aliens, you'd get laughed at. I think a lot of them would say it's nonsense. But in the last week, the news cycle, I imagine stateside and South America as well as the rest of the world, is dominated with the US bombing Iran. And we're hearing about these bunker buster bombs and that Iran has built a nuclear facility under the ground in the mountains. And you're like, these things will be very common. There will be tons of them because it makes the most sense, doesn't it? Especially since the advent of satellite and spy satellites that China, Russia, Iran, US, UK, Israel, they're all spying on each other using satellites. So you build under the ground because you can't hide anything in plain sight. It used to be Area 51. You could stick it out in the desert. No one would know it's there other than a select few. And it's hidden behind fencing and miles and miles and miles of desert. Then satellites come along. The imagery gets better. You take pictures of it from above. Now you have to go underground. So perhaps there's an element there of that kind of stuff comes into people's thinking a little bit more. Not saying at the expense of countries being bombed and wars and stuff like that, folks. Not that point. But it's a conversation that's funny that depending on the context, people will quite readily believe underground X, Y, and Z. Underground military bases harboring top secret technology. No, that's just conspiracy theories.
Yeah, and either satellites or Chinese spy balloons too, because they also use that.
Yeah,
and I bet they took a lot of imagery there.
Oh God, it's amazing that for years we've thought what all the cool tech these countries must have to be using to spy on each other, and it turns out one of the best sources of anything was just a big balloon going across. But the Ross Coulthart did kind of make a statement towards the end of that interview with Jesse Michaels that he feels a little bleak right now that the gatekeepers are going to get away with this. And I think Jesse Michaels was quite surprised with that statement as well. He said, you know, whistleblowers are wary of coming forward. He makes the point, look at what happened with David Grush, that he came forward. I get this as well as a lot of blurring of conversation, okay, because there's a lot of rumour around what Grush told Congress and what he didn't tell Congress. We're seeing a lot of rumours that various whistleblowers or officials are arranging meetings and cancelling last minute. But then we're hearing it's Congress that's cancelling things last minute. And it's all a bit murky. But if we're taking things at face value, Ross is saying Grush told Congress names, locations, literal rooms you can walk up to. And I think he was being a little bit, you know, facetious, but, you know, that open this door, that's where the Kingsman craft is. Open this door, that's where this craft is. But nothing's happened off the back of it. And all David Grush has gotten is a hard time off of journalists and medical files being leaked when they shouldn't have been. So can you understand why a lot of whistleblowers, Pavel, are still perhaps reluctant to come forward?
Yeah, but this also ties into what Matthew Brown has done recently, no? Because he seemed to be fed up with a lot of the BS that has been going around. And I think that there's a lot of people that are ready to come forward that are also fed up. And some of them don't really care about the consequences anymore, I would say. And over the next couple of weeks, I think that at least one more person is going to come out. From Jeremy Corbell and George Knapp, they said it themselves. And I think that we could pay attention to that. And also Matthew Brown is not done yet. He knows a lot of stuff. And especially after reading that tweet that he released but I do understand, some of them that are, weary of coming forward because of everything that's been going on in the background.
Yeah, I think it speaks to how difficult it is for people like Matthew Brown to come forward. And then I've spoke about this before at length, but this idea of we have a picture in our head of what a whistleblower should look and sound like, and then we see all these different characters come forward. And I don't mean that disparagingly, but, you know, Sarah Gamm to Lenville Logan to David Grush to Bob Lazar to Matthew Brown to Jason Sands, they all have different looks, feels, tones, expertise, backgrounds. And I think Grush, I don't think it's unfair to say, is probably the closest thing, if in our heads we all created the ideal whistleblower, what they would look and sound like, what their background would be. Is that unfair?
No, he's the most serious one of them all, I would say. I would say that Matthew Brown, when he came forward, a lot of people judged him because of the statements that he made about God and all the occultish stuff that he mentioned. That can always be a problem because people, whenever they hear the word occult or They hear people talking about this stuff. They immediately correlate it to something religious or, which I think is a mistake. I don't think it should be that way, but I understand people's reluctance when they hear somebody coming out like that, guns blazing, and then all of a sudden God is real or, you know, talking about occult stuff. I understand it. So yeah, Grush is the most serious one. Him and Nell. I would say that Nell could also be considered one of them because he's, although he's taking lead on trying to get action on everything that's happening, he's also just as serious as Grush. And I would add him to that conversation too.
Yeah, that's not unfair. I'd like to see some more folks come forward. I do wonder how many more folks of a similar ilk we really need to come forward, though. We do need something else. But what that something else is, unless we're going to get folks coming forward saying they literally worked on the craft and can help get that evidence, then I don't know. But I don't know if we're going to get that in the meantime. But like you say, Corbell and Knapp have delivered so far with Matthew Brown this year. Hopefully we see some more of that come forward. And I'd quite like to see David Grush come back out as well and hear some more from Grush. He's been pretty quiet in the background. A couple of other news bits before we go into some questions, Pavel. James Fox, documentary maker, has announced on social media that his entire archive is being transferred from videotape. For those of you who may be younger than some of his videotapes for how we used to watch stuff back in the day on TV when there were no streaming services, I was literally having to explain to my 9-year-old son what VHS was a few days ago and how before Netflix and the internet, you couldn't just watch what you wanted when you wanted to watch it.
You're making me feel old, Andy.
Oh, mate, it was mind-blowing for him. You had to have a physical copy of the thing and you would put it into a tape machine. But yeah, James Fox has this box of like 150 videos. It's all being digitized, loads of stuff from the 90s. And he said he's going to upload it to his own YouTube channel, more than likely. It'll be free. So hopefully get to speak to James Fox about that soon. But that'll be pretty cool. We don't know a whole lot of what's in there yet, but I imagine there'll be some kind of hidden gems.
And I would say it's going to probably blow up his channel because it's a lot of potentially never before seen stuff. I'm excited about that. Yeah. And who knows what he has there? Maybe some footage of something old that he was given back in the day. Something similar to that footage from what's his name? Clark.
Chuck
Clark. Yeah. Maybe
that's
something like
the one
that.
I really want to see that again, folks.
Yeah, me too.
If you've not heard James Fox talk about it, I've interviewed him a few times and brought it up, but he's mentioned it so many times. Basically, it was a videotape that James saw of two guys who were on like a road trip and driving in the desert. They basically were filming the VHS back in the 90s and come across this craft. And the video apparently from inside the car shows the light of the craft over the car and you see the wobble and the glow. Logan Paul apparently has a copy of it that he filmed with a kind of secret camera, which again, I would love to see. I'd love to get that. That is that one piece of footage that, you know, show me now. I'd love to see that leak, which would be awesome. That's good to see. One that you may appreciate, again, just given the nature of it, Elio is the latest Disney Pixar release. And I bring this up, folks, because it is about a little boy, Elio, who is really into UFOs and wants to be abducted by aliens after his parents die. And I bring this up because I just brought my little boy to see it, who's 4, a couple of days ago, Pavel, at the cinema. All about UFOs and aliens. Very quick review for me. It's fine. It's not the best Disney Pixar movie. It's opening to the lowest ever Disney Pixar opening weekend to date for multiple reasons. I'll be honest, it's not very memorable. Like it's missing some memorable characters. Like Frozen had Olaf the Snowman, that kind of stuff, you know, just to really bring it to life. It looks great. It's actually had really good reviews as well. It's got like a 80% fresh score on Rotten Tomatoes.
That's not bad.
Yeah, it's really decent. So I think it's one of those that perhaps the marketing just hasn't captured the imagination how it should have. But it's got things in it like the Voyager Golden Record been sent into space. messages being sent out to space, like three body problem. There's frozen time during an abduction. It's not a classic saucer. It's a weird cone-shaped spiral object. The first entity that the little boy meets is a liquid supercomputer, which I thought was really... And they say that in the thing as well. So it does approach the subject from a reasonably interesting non-linear point of view. And at the Air Force Base, no spoilers, folks, but it does have the typical... The UFO ends up in an Air Force base later. One of the guys says, Arrow is here and NASA is on its way, which is a nice little nod to Arrow and NASA and all that kind of stuff.
Whoa.
I would recommend taking your kids. It's like an hour and a half long. It's not the greatest Disney Pixar movie, but, you know, it was a fun little UFO alien cartoon. Just a shame it's not having a bigger impact on the public. But perhaps once it hits Disney Plus and it's on streaming, it'll do a little bit better. But it seems to be, I think you've got an alien spacecraft just in the background there, Pavel. It does seem to be the first of maybe quite a few movies, TV shows and documentaries with that UFO space theme, alien theme coming out over the next kind of year. Do you think this has a big impact on the public then? And what do you make of even the fact that it's not had a massive opening weekend?
Well, I guess if you're going to do an alien-themed kind of movie, if it's going to be kids-based, it does need to have those memorable characters, as you said. Because, for example, let's just put it in front of Lilo and Stitch, which has an alien. Everybody loves Stitch, and he's like legendary at this point. So that is going to play against it in the future, I think. But I don't know. I've seen other media pieces, presumably for kids, but they're not for kids. Have you seen, do you like anime in any way?
I've seen bits of it in the past.
There's
more
a show
bit, more when The Matrix called, came out back in the day.
There's a show called Dan Da Dan, which I've is on Netflix. Yeah. And that is tackled very well because that speaks about not just UFOs and aliens, but also about emerging with the paranormal. And I think that's something that either Pixar or Disney should explore in that way. I think that would be a better approach, in my opinion, because right now, and I had already heard a bit about Elio and some reviews, they called it a little bit generic. And now that I hear what you have to say, I would say that it may be generic. I haven't seen it, but yeah,
I don't think that's unfair. And I do mean, it does look nice at times, but I said to Dan earlier, he was on Twitter and he mentioned he'd watched it and he was really glowing about it. I think he said it was like Contact for kids, like the movie.
Yeah.
And I was I had a four-year-old with me who is probably good for that audience and he wasn't riveted by it. He thought it was okay. I mean, he's four, so he liked his flashing cup that he got from it. But it's like they had the shell of the movie, but just didn't. Imagine someone made you a nice cake for your birthday and they put the icing on it, but they then stopped decorating it. No more toppings. And it's nice.
Yeah.
And you appreciate it, but they could have gone to more effort. And I wonder in this age of streaming, like for example, not to go too off topic, folks, but Moana 2 was a 6-part series for Disney Plus. They decided before it was shown on Disney Plus, we're going to put this out in the cinema. So they had to go back and change the series to be more like a movie. And that's why Moana 2 as a movie is a bit disjointed and just has some random bits in it because it was meant to be a TV series. And I wonder how much more is that kind of thing happening where movies are suffering like this, where it was probably going to go straight to streaming. And then they went, nah, let's put it into the theater. Let's put it in the cinema. And it's not done particularly well. But I think modern day, things can do less well at the cinema, have a bigger audience on streaming, Disney Plus. Cinemas themselves are struggling generally. I think that's why in the last few years, things like Barbie and Oppenheimer having those kind of big blow up couple of weekends have been so big. And I'm a big fan of the cinema as well. So,
yeah.
It was up against Zombies and Dragons with 28 Years Later and How to Train Your Dragon as well. So perhaps that UFO alien topic isn't quite in the public psyche as much as some would claim or want it to be just yet. But take your kids to see it, folks. Go help out the cinemas, the local theatres.
I think that will change once the Spielberg movie comes out, I think. because it's Spielberg, you know?
Do you know what? Hopefully, yes, but it depends, because how often do we see or hear something is going to be coming out? We get an idea of what it could be, but then it turns out it's a movie about disclosure, but it's from a family's point of view that's breaking up. And the movie's actually more focused on the family and the breakdown of the family, but the background of the film is going to be do you know what I mean? Where,
yeah, you know, yeah.
I'm a big fan of the Tom Cruise War of the Worlds movie. However, yeah, that movie is a story about him and his kids with,
yeah,
the backdrop of an alien invasion. So I think it's been long enough now I can spoil it. You know, you've seen the movie, Pavel, yeah?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
You know that bit where, like, him and his kid go to the top of a hill and the kid's like, I need to see, and clearly over the hill there's a huge alien fight scene going on with the army, and you see the jets flying over and the tanks and the bombs and the lights and the flames going up, but they purposely don't show you the scene, and yeah, you focus on Tom Cruise and his kid and the kid going and him being like trying to hold him back, and then he has to leave, and then the big explosion.
And yeah, this happens a lot,
kind of like, I want to see that.
This happens a lot in Hollywood storytelling, because they try to focus it on a human story and anthropomorphize it a little bit more,
yep,
and not focus on, for example, yeah, the more non-human aspect of it. And I think this is what happens when you try to pitch one of these stories and there's a lot of suits inside the room.
Yeah.
And what they have to, that you have to pander to the suits so you can sell it. So that's why that happens, I think, most of the time.
Yeah, and you end up with something in between rather than committing either way. Like, yeah, but I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful, and even with that, Age of Disclosure, Dan Farah, that was, yeah, premiered now back in March. We're more than 3 months on from the premiere. Still no word on any release dates. I've tried to follow it up. I know other people have as well. The Age of Disclosure X feed isn't particularly active. Neither is Dan Farah's. I think the last update was from around a month ago in May, and it mentions that they're still looking for suppliers, etc., distribution. When there are announcements, they'll be on the website and on the social media. So again, yeah, Alien has a TV series coming out on Hulu. So I believe it's Hulu or whatever it's going to be on in the UK. I can't remember. But that starts in a couple of weeks or a couple of months. So there is a lot of content coming up and coming out. But yeah, so just keep your eye on your TV screens and theatres, folks, for that.
Yeah.
Pavel, good for some listener questions before you head off.
Yeah, let's do it. Yeah.
My new book, Atlas of Unidentified Flying Objects, is now available to pre-order wherever books are sold, including Amazon, Barnes & Noble and Waterstones. Explore the UFO phenomenon through 34 cases from throughout the world, with accompanying pictures and maps in a beautiful hardback edition or download for your Kindle. Links available in the podcast description below.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week? Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week? Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again. Sally from Finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.